Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2018 first quarter earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Scott Wylie, Chief Executive Officer. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. We're very pleased to report profitable growth and underwriting performance in the first quarter, highlighted by a strong combined ratio and continued above-average return on equity and book value appreciation. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide detail about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its first quarter 2018 financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the Risk Factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2017. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. Though we may address a few slides specifically, in general, we will use this as an accompaniment. Feel free to follow along as we will follow the basic structure of this document. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. For those of you following along with the presentation, we'll begin on slide three. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. We had a solid start in 2018. Net income was generated by operating results in line with our expectations. Importantly, claim activities in the quarter also fell in line with our expectations, which I'll detail later in the call. Especially given the meaningful rate activity we implemented in recent quarters, we're happy with our revenue growth, which reflected higher average premiums per insured vehicle and continuing signs of effective relative risk selection. Key elements of our financial results for the quarter, as highlighted on slide three, include a strong combined ratio based on our measured approach to new business writings, improved net income per share, and an annualized return on equity of 24.3%. Net income after tax was $5.5 million, or $0.45 per diluted common share. This compares with $4.9 million, or $0.40, in last year's first quarter. We're monitoring loss development closely and are pleased to confirm that results in the first quarter were consistent with the expectations we shared on our last call. Book value per diluted common share for Atlas as of March 31st, 2018, is $7.62, compared with $7.42 as of December 31st, 2017, and $10.99 as of March 31st, 2017. Paul will provide more detail on our financial results in a few minutes. Atlas has a longstanding focus on delivering a strong value proposition as a highly specialized writer of commercial auto insurance products to the dynamic niche market of people using light vehicles to move people around. We have continued to see our market shift from more traditional taxi business over to livery, limo, and paratransit. Additionally, the total addressable market has continued to grow as a $2 billion-$2.5 billion subsector within the broader range of the commercial auto insurance market. We've also seen a trend towards a greater proportionate amount of owner-operators, which is positive from our underwriting perspective. To the extent that part-time transportation network and other gig economy drivers increasingly purchase commercial insurance, the size of our market could increase by as much as an additional $500 million-$1 billion. We've built a competitive advantage through the evolution of our existing infrastructure that provides localized and more effective customer care with the benefit of a larger integrated national platform. We also have integrated the use of technology and analytics throughout our business, which we believe will help to properly assess and price risk across all geographies, while also helping us to identify and impact loss trends as quickly as possible. As discussed on past calls, all of our bodily injury claims are now running through our proprietary predictive model, and I'll provide additional data regarding results in this area later in the call. The heritage of the companies we've acquired over the years serves as the basis for the strong value proposition and comparative advantages we deliver to our customers and business partners. Our use of analytics and technology helps us amplify its value to all stakeholders. Initially, I'll focus my comments on operational activities, and later in the call, I'll provide claim and reserve-related detail and share expectations for the future. Let me take a few moments and break down our business mix as summarized on slides four and five. Overall, trends within our niche market remain fairly consistent. Taxi has been relatively flat as an addressable market, but is more price sensitive than other segments. Livery and paratransit continue to grow in overall size, driven by more owner-operators entering the space. We continue to take advantage of the hard market with increases in rate across our book of business. Our limo and livery and paratransit businesses reported a higher average premium per vehicle, increasing on a quarter-over-quarter basis, while taxi premium per vehicle declined slightly due to higher retention on better than average accounts. More challenged taxi accounts tended to non-renew in the face of rate increases. We continued to see an expanding underlying addressable market and remain focused on profitability to grow our market share within our niche. On slide five, you can see the transition in our business. Over the past few years, we've worked within a unique market that has seen a shift from more traditional taxi business to livery drivers, including commercially licensed operators dispatched in whole or in part through transportation network companies. At this stage, limo and livery is over 50% of our business, and the growing paratransit segment remains approximately 35% of our book. We navigated this shift in market dynamics in a strategic manner consistent with our underwriting goals over the long term. We've been patient and thorough to ensure that the business we write in this evolving environment meets our underwriting criteria. We're finding that the initiatives we pursued over the past few years relative to in-vehicle technology are having a significant impact as well. We believe that Atlas has the most comprehensive perspective on the risks facing our market. One of our tangible advantages throughout the evolution of our business has been Atlas's ability to utilize the data and expertise aggregated over the years within this specific niche market. This resource is a hard-to-replicate asset that can only be developed over time. We are focused on not compromising our underwriting criteria to chase business and are adhering to our analytics models and claims expertise to achieve the bottom-line targets we set and intend to prove to the market. In total, Atlas's gross written premiums in the quarter were $95.6 million, a decrease compared to $98.5 million in the prior year period. This reduction included the non-renewal of a multimillion-dollar Illinois account that no longer fit our underwriting criteria. This type of large account is the exception, with the majority of our business being made up of owner-operators and small fleets. It's important to keep in mind the fact that there is some seasonality in our written premiums, and many Illinois and New York-based operators' insurance programs renew in the first quarter. We continue to examine each renewal under our model to ensure that the premium is sufficient for the risk in each geographic region. For the remaining quarters of the year, we currently expect gross written premium increases on a year-over-year basis. Moving on to slide six, you can see the diverse geographic breakdown where we're currently writing. We grew well in states such as New Jersey, Minnesota, and Virginia, but have continued to be selective in our new business writings to reach our underwriting criteria and increase rate as needed. Our three largest states in which we write business remain New York, California, and Illinois. We expect premium fluctuations geographically as we react to changing market conditions. Nationwide, our market share is estimated at approximately 12%-13%, with proportionate share forecast at 20%. A key element of Atlas's strategy is continuing to grow our traditional niche market based on our strong value proposition while pricing conditions remain favorable. The niche Atlas addresses is approximately $2 to $2.5 billion of the broader $35 billion in annual commercial auto premium in the U.S. and growing. To be clear, this figure includes only full-time professional taxi, limo, livery, and paratransit drivers. Moving to the next slide, we've included the fourth quarter CIAB pricing data. We expect to have the Q1 shortly from CIAB. However, based on our own research, we anticipate a continuation of the hardening of rate observed in recent quarters and specific hardening in our niche market. There are no signs of price-aggressive new entrants in our space. As you can see on slide 8, new business quote levels are strong, as are hit ratios. While volumes will fluctuate on a weekly basis, you can see that the longer-term trend on new submissions is moving up gradually over time, while hit ratios remain stable. Broader commercial auto is now seeing significant rate being pushed in the market, largely due to an elevated loss pattern recognized for older accident years. We've been taking advantage of favorable pricing trends in virtually all of our markets. While data from this source has not been updated since our last call, indications from other large commercial auto insurers thus far in earnings season reinforces the view that the market will continue to harden. Atlas is continuing to target a better than 60% loss ratio, but plan to take an appropriately conservative approach to current year loss selections. Slide 10 demonstrates that we've sequentially increased base rate levels above the industry as represented by ISO rates. As you can see, rate change in recent quarters is near the highest levels we've seen since the market began firming in 2012. Furthermore, our use of predictive analytics is resulting in a strong bias towards accounts expected to deliver better margins, as shown in the chart on the lower right side of the page. While we did strengthen reserves for prior period at year-end, our expectation is that the full year 2018 loss and LAE ratio should reflect the positive impacts of more recent initiatives and fall within the range of 60 to 62% indicated on our last call on a full year basis. We're confident in our more recent accident year results and believe they reflect the relative value of our specialized focus and the earnings that it can generate. As shown on slide 11, our total in-force premium is nearly $275 million, and while we do not position our business to grow the top line as a priority, we are on track to reach $300 million or more for 2018. We are wholly focused on maximizing our return on deployed capital while maintaining the proper amounts of operating leverage. The financial tools we've put in place, including our quota share reinsurance program, enable us to do this at an attractive cost without creating the need to externally raise capital. As always, we continue to evaluate capital structure on an ongoing basis and believe that reinsurance solutions offer uniquely valuable opportunities given current market conditions. Seasonality will have an impact in terms of written premium in any given quarter, although this has been and should continue to flatten as our book becomes more diversified. Maximizing return on deployed capital is at the foundation of our business model, and as a result, we plan to grow and shrink our business by geographic market based on loss trends and changes in each competitive environment. I'll now turn the call back over to Paul. After his review of our financial results, I'll provide more detail regarding claim and reserve-related activities with the objective of sharing additional data for investors with as much transparency around our claims processes as possible. Later this month, we'll hold an investor day at which that will be the primary focus. I'll also share some additional observations regarding our expectations for the future.
Thanks, Scott. As always, I encourage you to review our filings, our slide presentation, and to reach out to Scott or myself with any questions. Slide 12 provides key financial highlights. For the first quarter of 2018, gross premiums written decreased by 3% to $95.6 million compared to $98.5 million for the three-month period ended March 31, 2017. As previously mentioned, The decrease was primarily due to non-renewal of a large Illinois taxi fleet based on our disciplined underwriting practices. The first quarter generally has the highest proportion of taxi-related business written, and given the fact that this segment is relatively flat and also more price sensitive, our expectations for year-over-year growth in this quarter were modest. At March 31, 2018, in-force premiums increased 7.4% to $274.6 million compared to $268.5 million in the corresponding period. Net income for the first quarter 2018 was $5.5 million, or 45 cents earnings per common share diluted, compared to $4.9 million, or 40 cents per diluted share in the prior year quarter. Annualized return on equity was 24.3% in the first quarter 2018, compared to 14.9% in the prior year quarter. As shown on slide 13, at March 31, 2018, our operating leverage, as measured by net written premium to combined statutory surplus, was roughly 2.3 to 1, as indicated in the top chart. Managing our operating leverage is important from both regulatory and rating agency perspectives. During the first quarter 2018, our quota share cession rates were 5% and 25% of subject written premium for the ASI pool companies and for Global Liberty, respectively. Effective April 1, 2018, the cession rate for the ASI pool was increased to 30% and is consistent with the guidance we provided on our last earnings call. The cession rate for Global Liberty will remain unchanged at 25%. Slide 14 breaks out the key components of our combined ratio after accounting for the effects of reinsurance. Atlas's combined ratio increased for the three-month period ended March 31, 2018, to 89.3% compared to 86.9% in the prior year period. The loss ratio relating to claims incurred for the three-month period ended March 31, 2018 was 62.7% compared to 60.5% for the three-month period ended March 31, 2017. The loss ratio increased over the prior year period primarily because of the company's continued review of underwriting profitability by state and product and higher than expected claim costs associated with Atlas's participation in non-voluntary assigned risk pools. The underwriting expense ratio for the three-month period ended March 31, 2018 was 26.6% compared to 26.4% for the three-month period ended March 31, 2017. The ratio included a $520,000 benefit from the stock purchase agreement, which is the final adjustment related to the Global Liberty acquisition, and actual payment timing of expenses versus Q1 of 2017. Slide 15 provides an overview of the key components of our combined ratio over time. As always, we encourage users to look at these ratios on an annualized basis rather than focus on change from quarter to quarter, as there are a number of factors that can impact the shorter-term view. Slides 16 and 17 provide an overview of the overall balance sheet strength and our cash and invested assets. We have always maintained the view of a conservative investment philosophy is important. Our primary investment objective is to protect capital and support underwriting operations. As seen on slide 17, while the majority of our $240 million of cash and invested assets are publicly traded high-quality fixed income securities, we do have approximately $30 million of other than fixed income investments, or OTFI. Half of these OTFIs are private commercial real estate-backed investments. The remainder are a combination of investments deemed appropriately conservative by our investment committee. All of these investments are audited annually and qualify as admitted assets from an insurance regulatory standpoint. We do not have concerns about the value of any of these investments. However, based on our current book value, we have made a decision to reduce the percentage of OTFIs during the year In the first quarter of 2018, these investments were reduced by $1.4 million. On slide 18, we walk through the changes affecting book value per share in the quarter. Book value per common share was $7.62 as of March 31, 2018, compared to $7.42 on December 31, 2017. The components of the 20-cent change relative to December 31, 2017 are shown on slide 18. Please note that the change to unrealized losses on our fixed income portfolio had a non-cash reduction of 17 cents on book value per share in the first quarter of 2018. With that, let me turn the call back to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. The company's first quarter results were strong, with an annualized return on equity of 24.3% in the first quarter 2018 compared to 14.9% in the prior year quarter. While we're pleased with the increase in operating income that contributed to this result, we're also cognizant of the importance of maintaining and growing book value. We are committed to the ongoing stringent evaluation of our claims inventory and subsequent closure rates. Thus far, these metrics are performing at levels consistent with our expectations. We are benefiting from significant market-driven tailwinds in terms of new business written and retention. The niche on which we focus is not only evolving, but also growing, and we're seeing stable retention while still being able to remain a market leader in terms of pricing. The higher levels of severity and frequency in other areas of commercial auto are certainly creating an environment where rate is moving in a favorable direction. However, we understand that this is a cyclical business, and we remain dedicated to getting it right across cycles. Historically, our subsidiaries have outperformed broader commercial auto, and we still are seeing this to be the case despite the reserve strengthening both we and others in the commercial auto have experienced in recent years. Slide 20 provides an overview of both premium and policy count distribution based on modeled underwriting scores. As you can see, while overall premiums follow a relatively bell-shaped curve, which is consistent with loss cost distribution in general, the bias of policies written is towards the right, which are the score bands expected to generate the best underwriting profit. In short, we've utilized tools and predictive modeling to move our policy counts to those accounts with the best predicted loss experience. On slide 21, you can see evidence of this improved risk selection. Reported claims are relatively flat since we launched predictive analytics and underwriting, despite the fact that insured vehicle counts are up approximately 20%. In addition, our average premium relative to risk is also up over that same period. Our team has worked diligently to identify any problematic claims with the goal of ensuring that we defend our clients against non-meritorious claims, but also proactively get viable claims to the most appropriate resolution as quickly and accurately as possible. We have an exceptional team, and we've been very pleased with the progress. Slide 22 provides a detail with respect to losses and loss adjustment expenses paid on a calendar year basis for the ASI pool companies. As you can see, paid activity in both areas has come down incrementally in the past 2 years following our deployment of predictive modeling in the claims area in early 2016. We're encouraged by this general trend and expect it to continue to improve for these companies. More detailed information is provided on slide 23. On the left side of the page, we provide a breakdown of open claim counts and reserves for each of the distinct categories of claim types, which we believe have different characteristics. The first category is made up of liability claims, which were scored by our predictive analytics tools. These claims were reported at or after mid-April of 2016 and now represent the largest single category of open claim counts. Case reserves for these claims are set at the amount predicted to be ultimate by our models. Thus far, we've closed 6,437 of these claims for a total paid amount of $42.4 million against modeled reserves of $54.4 million. Approximately 22% of redundancy returned $12 million back into IBNR. The second category are older claims which were not modeled, primarily accident years 2015 and prior. As part of our year-end process, we asked experienced adjusters to review each and every one of these claims and establish a database as a benchmark against which settlements can be compared. As you can see, this inventory is shrinking and will eventually be fully eliminated. In the first quarter, we closed 317 of these claims for $8.6 million as compared to our estimated range of $5.4 to $13.3 million, almost exactly at our best estimate. there is a remaining inventory of 899 of these claims left. The third category are the declining inventory of Michigan claims. As discussed in detail on prior calls, this geography has been very challenged, and our overall policy count in the state is currently less than 1% and continuing to decline. Our year-end actuarial work now supports a 120% incremental rate increase for Michigan in 2018, which we're now in the process of implementing. All Michigan claims have been filed, reviewed by internal specialists in this state, and amounts paid have been consistent with their expectations. 384 open claims remain in inventory at this point. The other case category are primarily physical damage claims, which are generally low severity and have very limited volatility around settlement amounts given the short time frame in which they are open. Overall, accident year 2017 and prior reserves were reduced by 15.5% since year-end, while overall pending claim activity was reduced by more than 30%. This is not expected to be a linear relationship, but we are encouraged to see all these metrics moving in the right direction. On the right side of slide 23, we provide a breakdown of total reserves, including IBNR, by the same categories. As you can see, IBNR as a percentage of total reserves remains relatively constant, while older pre-model and Michigan claims are run off and predictive model-based case reserves are growing as a percentage of total reserves. This is a good indication that claim closures are not eroding IBNR, especially as the older non-modeled claims are wound down. To conclude, many of the initiatives we outlined earlier in the year regarding our claims processes and closure rates are coming in as expected, with the goal of being able to accurately provide tangible data supporting our reserving over time. The goal is to get it right and ensure that investors can rely on our ability to underwrite effectively and have confidence in the earnings power related to Atlas's value proposition. We understand that this is the backdrop against which our go-forward operating results will be considered. That said, we continue to expect to generate full-year net income per share in excess of $2. Provided loss activities continue to behave as we've been observing, the full-year loss ratio should trend in a positive direction. While we didn't talk much about it on this call, we will continue to manage our business in an operationally efficient manner and as a result maintain an expense ratio in the range we've seen in the past year. I hope to see many of you at our Investor Day at our headquarters in Schaumburg immediately following our annual general meeting, which will begin at 10 a.m. Central Time on May 22nd. In this year's event, we anticipate focusing on our claims process and how we're utilizing all the technological advancements we've developed and integrated to generate the best possible bottom-line outcome for our customers, agents, and investors. We will also talk in more detail about opportunities in the near term, as well as the longer term, from a strategic perspective. More details regarding this event are provided on slide 25. Now, let's open it up for questions, Michelle.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Matt Carletti with JMP Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, Matt.
Just a few questions. Maybe if we start with the additional information you've provided, I guess I'm looking at slide 22. The bullet on the right about the aggregate paid being $8.6 million versus the expected range of 5.4 to 13.3, can you give us a little more context there? I mean, that obviously looks like a good outcome, but can you help us understand maybe where were those claims reserved within that range, or if they weren't done on a per case basis but more of a group basis, maybe how does the remaining population of claims look kind of within their range? Did they move up in the range once those 26% of claims got paid out? I'm just trying to get an idea of how much, it's early days, but how much development one way or the other that might imply if the whole group kind of followed that pattern.
Sure. So at year-end 17, as part of our year-end process, we asked a group of very experienced adjusters with literally 10, 20, even 30 years of experience to review all of the open claims that had not been modeled because they were too old at the time the model was implemented. So those are predominantly accident year 2015 and prior. There were about 1,300 claims at year-end in that inventory. And in January of 2018, we concluded that analysis and built a database that essentially identified kind of a low, high, and expected amount for each and every one of those claims. And our goal was to use that information as part of our overall year-end reserving process. And also at this point, you know, it serves as a benchmark against which we can measure those outcomes. So those older claims have had factor case reserves put up against them, which was put in place as part of our transition to the predictive modeling-based reserving practice. And we were relying on the bulk IBNR as developed by our actuaries at year-end to essentially achieve ultimate on those groups of claims. So we did not change the case reserve on those claims. However, we did compare our claim staff's analysis of expected ultimate with the actuarial prediction that was developed by our outside actuaries. And the case or the overall reserves set at year-end 2017 exceeds the expected outcome that was established by our adjusters for those accident years. And if you look at slide 23, on the right side, the gray portion of the bar chart that we refer to as file review, that actually provides the amount based on our adjusters' expectations, not the lower factor reserves. So to the extent that we continue to pay those claims at our adjusters' expectations, the gray bar will eventually be eliminated, and it should not require the use of any of the IBNR, which is reflected by the larger green bar in those bar charts.
Okay. Follow-on question, actually, while you moved us to slide 23. Lower left-hand chart, the second kind of category in from the left, the potential scored redundancy. Is that, I mean, it looks to me like $8 million or something in that ballpark. Is that essentially your adjuster's kind of most likely outcome case versus where the external actual or where you actually have it reserved? Is that delta what's being reflected there?
No. As we referred to on the call, the actual paid claim amounts for claims that have been modeled and have subsequently been closed are coming in at about 22% less than the model had predicted. And
yep.
So that $8 million is effectively 20 or 22% of the current open modeled case reserve. So the expectation is if the payments on those scored claims continues to be consistent with what we've seen thus far, it should release that amount of reserve back into IBNR. But it is not reflected in the green IBNR number on the bar chart to the right. So we're not taking credit for it from a reserving perspective. We're keeping those case reserves up at the full amount predicted by the model. But thus far, you know, the model proves to be holding up. And we believe that, you know, a good amount of that redundancy is the efficacy of using the modeling to triage claims earlier, identify potentially larger claims, especially those in the $10,000 to $50,000 range, and route them more effectively, either settling them earlier with better outcomes or, if appropriate, defending them more aggressively earlier, again, with the objective of achieving a better outcome through a stronger defense of those non-meritorious claims.
Okay. And that bucket mostly is accident year 16 and 17, correct? The scored bucket.
Correct. And of course, now 18 as well.
But yeah,
it really starts with predominantly accident year 16. There are some accident year 15 claims that would have been reported after mid-April of 16. Those also would be modeled.
Okay, great. And then this last question, just switching away from reserves into the gross written premiums in the quarter. I mean, definitely appreciate your comments about kind of non-renewing one large customer due to, you know, you couldn't get the price you want, I assume. You know, what just more anecdotally or qualitatively, you know, even when you, I think you back that out, the growth rate slowed, and I know you guys are putting through pretty significant rate increases, so that's not surprising. Can you talk just a little bit about, you know, Do you think any of that, was there any concern in the market in your conversations with clients about, you know, what happened in Q4 and anything, you know, ratings or otherwise related? Or do you think it really is just a, you know, a little bit of sticker shock and you know, the market will, you know, kind of come around to it in terms of pricing?
Yeah, you know, we did have a lot of dialogue, of course, with our independent agents and large customers, you know, after the pre-announcement earlier in the year. The question we got more often than not was, you're not exiting the market, are you? So there really is, I think, a scarcity of product. We're seeing large generalists in the commercial auto space re-underwriting their books. We are not seeing any signs of those type of underwriters coming into our space through more price-aggressive MGAs. And so there is definitely continued demand. We did not see any significant slowdown of applications after the pre-announcement. You know, I think a lot of that is because our customers are generally not particularly sensitive to external ratings. They put a lot of value on the customer service we provide, and in particular our claims handling capability. And so, you know, we delivered a strong message that we're staying committed to this niche. We are going to be disciplined from an underwriting perspective, which means we're not always going to be the cheapest price, but we are going to continue to deliver that strong value proposition and differentiate on claims, and continue to feel confident in the company's financial strength and ability to pay claims. So, you know, we don't think that that slowdown is a result of a reaction to any particular news. But, you know, if you look at the sequential rate change we took since 2012, when the market began firming, this is the third time that we pushed rate through at around 20% on a sequential basis in areas where ISO was changing rates in a particular quarter. We did see a slowdown in terms of business the last time we pushed rate, but as with the last time, which was about a year and a half ago, we do anticipate that the market will follow price leadership. We also believe that ISO rates are going to continue to go up this year at higher levels. And so provided those things come in as we expect, we do anticipate continued growth, but also at higher average premiums. The final point I'd reiterate is Paul touched on is, you know, the first quarter is our largest quarter for taxi business, and taxi is the one segment that we focus on that is the most price sensitive, especially for accounts that have been loss challenged and require a rate increase. There are cheaper prices in the market, especially kind of local non-standard companies in some cases, who will pick those accounts up, especially the larger ones, for rates that we believe are going to be inadequate. So, you know, we're happy to let that business go if necessary, if we're not able to generate the rate we expect. So I think it's really the combination of all those things. But as I touched on, we do expect that for the remaining quarters of the year that are less proportionately focused on taxi, we will continue to see good growth, because we did see positive growth in the limo livery line as well as in the paratransit line in the quarter, and we expect that to continue through the balance of the year.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the all the color and the answers, and congrats on a nice start to the year.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bill Dezellem with Titan Capital Management. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. In the, I'll call it guidance, but just the commentary relative to 2018, you have mentioned that the mid-80s combined ratio leads you to over a couple of dollars of earnings this year. However, the first quarter was a little bit above that that mid-80s combined ratio. And I'm just curious how you feel like you're going to get to that mid-80s number over the course of the year, given that you started a little off that mark.
Sure. We tried to provide some context on our last call that we did anticipate beginning the year with a loss ratio selection that was higher than what we were targeting. You know, our full year loss ratio post-strengthening for accident year 17 came in around 60%. You know, as we've shared, we've taken a lot of rate in the second half of last year and continue to do that. We are continuing to expect positive impacts from the use of modeling and underwriting as well as claims also. So all of those things should result in a ultimate loss ratio for 2018 that is better than what we're currently carrying. However, we do want to be appropriately conservative out of the gate and are going to wait to see losses continue to come in as we expect throughout the year and maybe even into next year before we're going to really take full credit for where we're pricing. So a lot of the change over the course of the year would relate to the loss ratio. And again, only if we continue to see the positive trends that we're expecting and began to see in the first quarter in terms of claims activity. So that's really a key component of it. We do expect a little bit of improvement in the expense ratio as well. You know, there are always some timing issues that impact the expense ratio on a quarterly basis. And so on a full year basis, we are anticipating a slight improvement on the expense ratio as well.
Great. Thank you, Scott.
Great. Thanks for the question, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bob Farnam with Benning and Scattergood. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah. Hi there, and good morning.
Quite
kind of a minor topic, but you had a couple points of adverse reserve development, and sounds like it was largely related to the assigned risk pools. How have the assigned risk pools, that business performed in recent quarters loosely, and is it reasonable to expect to be kind of a modest drag going forward given the loss trends in commercial auto for the industry overall?
Yes, certainly those costs are unexpected and are forced on some of the companies in the jurisdictions that, you know, generate that business. You know, we have a difficult time forecasting those sorts of impacts on a quarterly basis. We do believe because of the impacts across the commercial auto business generally that we will see a continuation of some deterioration from prior years in respect to these involuntary pools. Again, I can't necessarily pinpoint a number, but we will continue to see some drag on the loss ratio as we continue this year.
Yeah, if you look back at the last 2 years, not every quarter, but in some quarters, you know, we have had amounts in, you know, hundred thousands of dollars. In one case, I think there was $1.5 million or so. So from time to time in the past, we have seen that impact because of the requirement that we take some of that assigned risk business, which is all proportionate to the amount of commercial auto premium that we write in the given jurisdiction as a percentage of all commercial auto premiums from, you know, the broader segment. So, you know, I don't think we'd anticipate it to be a material impact over the course of the full year. But as Paul mentioned, I think it's important to reiterate, that is something that is a result of the industry outcome, and it is assigned to us. It's not something that we choose to participate in. And so it's, you know, everybody in the commercial auto space is proportionately going to be affected by that issue, you know, until the overall segment stabilizes.
Right. And if I read your commentary, it sounds like you had little over 2 points of you know, quote unquote, unfavorable development. Is that 1.4 that come from the assigned risk pool?
A majority of it comes from the assigned risk pool. The differential, the 1.4, is from the prior year quarter. So we did have some.
Okay,
in
right.
2017, about 0.6 of the total loss ratio in 2017 versus 2 points in the first quarter for 2018.
All right, so it was almost all of it.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Once again, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our next question comes from the line of John Deysher with Pinnacle Capital Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. I have a couple of questions. One, the tax rate came down from about 35% to 19%. And I know this is the first quarter of the new tax rates, but I was curious, can we normalize that 19% going forward, or was there some noise in there that we should be aware of?
Yeah, John, there was a little bit of noise in the first quarter related to the stock purchase agreement adjustment. So normalized Fed tax rate is going to be at 21% going forward.
Okay. Is there any state or local taxes that we have to address as well?
Those are going to be in our operating expense line. So most of the expense related to taxes is going to be in that 21% for federal.
Okay, great. Thank you. I also noticed that you bought back some stock. It's a good sign. Is that part of a formal authorization, or can you tell us exactly what the background is on that?
Sure. So that was purchased under a 10b5-1 plan that was put in place last year, early in the year. It's algorithm driven, and that authorization was fully utilized as of the end of the first quarter. We have kept the 10b5 in place. The board obviously reviews all capital allocation related matters from, you know, time to time, and certainly on a quarterly basis. So to the extent that we are going to reauthorize that, we will press release at such time.
And I know it's early, but do you anticipate doing so?
You know, as part of the overall review of sort of use of capital, obviously we look at the stock buyback as part of broader capital allocation. So, you know, while we may believe the stock price is undervalued, based on our expectation in terms of earnings, et cetera, the decision to buy back is always driven ultimately by sources and uses of capital and cost of capital. And so, you know, as we look at the market, our opportunity to grow, our confidence in the earnings power from an underwriting perspective this year, you know, we do want to deploy our capital into underwriting because we believe that that will generate the highest return on capital. But are always going to make sure that we have as many different levers available to us as possible to manage the capital allocation as well. So I realize that that was a general answer to a specific question, but to the extent that we are going to reauthorize it, as I said, we will press release the details. But I think it is important to understand that capital allocation is something we look at as a core competency, and it is something that the board pays a lot of attention to.
Understood. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks for the questions, John.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back over to Mr. Wolny for any closing remarks.
Very good. Thanks again, Michelle. And thank you, everyone, for participating on our call today. And once again, hope to see many of you at our Investor Day later this month.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.